Thanks, Matt, and good morning, everyone. I'm Nicholas Elmquist, and I'll be talking about, you already got a preview of what I'll be talking about. It's Scatter Dice, and the more official name is, like you said, Rolling the Dice, Multidimensional Visual Exploration Using Scatterplot Matrix Navigation. I'm with Purdue University, but this work was done at INRIA together with Jean-Daniel Fiquet and Pierre Dragicevic. Pierre is not here today, he's at WIST. So the problem that we attack in this paper is kind of fundamental in information visualization, and we see it every year at the conference. You have a problem with visualizing complex data. You have a complex data set, and what do you do? Well, typically, you would come up with a complex visualization to match it. Well, in our work, we're taking a slightly different perspective. A complex visualization has problems. You want to show all the details, all the aspects of the data. You might have a problem of losing some of your users. And as if you have seen, as we will see in this conference, I expect, is that an increasing amount of our users are not experts. So in our work, we propose to, instead of having a complex visualization, create a combination of many simple visualizations and stitch them together using animated interactive transitions. Taking a little bit of a step back, Infamous at this time is, you know, more than 15 years old, at least, depending on how you count. And throughout the years, we've seen lots of visual representations. You see new ones every year, and we'll see some new ones this year as well. They all have varying complexity, they all have varying purpose. Many of them are targeted at expert users. But one of the mainstays of data visualization is scatterplots, one of the oldest, one of the most commonly used, and also according to Matthew Erickson from the keynote at InfoViz last year, who is working at the New York Times, is one of the few visualizations, maybe the most complex visualization that a New York Times reader can understand, at least if one of the axes are time. So scatterplots are used for multidimensional data. We've seen it in many visualization tools that exist already. Most people in this room will know what a scatterplot is. Typically, you assign dimensions to graphical dimensions, two, sometimes three, even though there's a lot of issues with 3D scatterplots that I'll not go into here. And you plot each data case in the data set as a point in the space that's defined by the axis. If you want to visualize additional dimensions above these two or three, you might have to go look at the size of the points, maybe their shape or color. But that's really it. You can't go much further than that. So it's only a handful of dimensions that you can actually visualize using a scatterplot. And the problem is that most, well, many at least, maybe most realistic, interesting data sets have more dimensions than that, at least in this, excuse me, in this domain. So there are two different ways of attacking this problem. You could either decide to go for something more complex than a scatter plot, but something like parallel coordinates, perhaps, or the data meta technique that I discussed last year at VAST. But the problem then is that you might lose a large portion of your readership, like the New York Times readership might not understand a more complex visualization than a scatter plot, or your users might not be really interested in having to learn another visual representation. So another approach that we actually investigate in our paper is to instead stick with something that we already know, scatter plots, and we create a lot of them, one scatter plot for each combination of data dimension. But then the problem that then instead becomes, well, we still have a lot of scatter plots. They're simple, so users can hopefully understand each individual one. But we have to manage this large number, and we have to visualize them somehow. One way to do that, which has been explored already in the literature, is to create a matrix of all dimensions. Basically, it's a table. We put all the dimensions on the rows and the columns of the table, and each cell in this table becomes a scatter plot. The good thing about a matrix or a table here is that the order is not really intrinsic, so we can do reordering of the rows and columns to find some kind of order that makes sense. People have already done this, and I'll encourage you to look at the paper to get some relevant references, but what we do in this paper is to add something of a twist. Instead of just being happy with using a scatter plot matrix, as we call them, as a visualization itself, we use it as a space for navigation. And in this way, we transform the visual exploration process into a navigation problem. So we put the control in the hands of the user, and I'll show you how this works very soon. But the result of doing this is that we can still stick with the scatterplots that we know and still be able to visualize complex data sets effectively. Here's a scatterplot matrix. It's a digital camera data set. It's about 1,000 cameras. And you can note that we put, well, it's 13 different dimensions, I think. You put all the dimensions on the rows and the columns of the matrix. And each little thumbnail you see is the resulting scatterplot. We take the step beyond this to say that you can actually navigate in this, because you have an issue with so many scatterplots. How would you know how one cell, the points in one cell, relate to the points in another? So our objective in this work is to show correlation and to give interactive control of this navigation to the user. So given this idea that you can actually navigate in a scatterplot matrix, we want to provide an animated transition so that between a scatterplot A and a scatterplot B, so that people can follow how points in one plot map to points in another. One standard way of doing this would be to linearly interpolate points in one plot A to the points in plot B, but there are some issues with doing this. First of all, there's no real semantic meaning of just the linear interpolation. You'll see points moving across the screen from using the shortest path from the start point to the end point. And if you have a lot of data points, a large data set, this becomes increasingly hard. So we were interested in also answering the question if we can add some kind of meaning to the transition to make it easier to follow. Well, it turns out that we could. Our approach was to, first of all, restrict the movement in this navigation space that the matrix provides to be rectilinear. So that is, you can only move vertically or horizontally. This means that only one dimension will change at any point in time, so that the user will have some understanding. At least I'm looking at the digital camera data set. I'm looking at the price of a camera over the release year. If I want to navigate to another dimension, look at another scatter plot, and I'll show you a demo very soon. We do this in an animated way so that only one of the two dimensions change at the same time. And we also opt to use the third dimension that we don't really use. We're dealing with scatter plots in 2D, as you see, for the actual transition. And it's sort of like rotating dice in order to see, go from one side to see another. That's the metaphor that we use. It's important to note that this is not a 3D visualization technique. As I mentioned earlier, there's a whole host of problems of using 3D scatter plots, including occlusion and depth perception. We don't want to go there. We use the third dimensional because it's invisible when you're viewing a 2D scatter plot, so we can lazily allocate the data dimension that we want to visualize at the time the user is doing the navigation. So I'll show you how this works. We just found two different ways of doing this. We could do it in a perspective 3D mode, which is where you have depth foreshortening. So things that are far away are smaller, things that are closer get bigger. This is the normal way that people mostly see things. The interesting thing then is that we have to do the rotation in three steps. I'll show you this too, where you first have to extrude the scatter plot into 3D, where the depth dimension becomes the new data dimension that you're going to, then rotate and finally project back into 2D. The other way is to do it orthographically, where you have an orthographic projection. This means you throw away the depth coordinate. It looks more artificial, but it means you can do the rotation in one step. We opted to do the perspective rotation because it looks better, but we have options of doing this elsewhere too. So this is a schematic view of how this looks. You'll find this picture in the paper. I'm actually going to turn to a demo now to show you how it looks. So this is the scatter dice application. You will see on the right, there's a main. If I find my, yeah. There's a main scatterplot 2D in 2D on the right side. On the left side, you'll find the scatterplot matrix that represents the space that we're navigating. We're currently here in the scatterplot. It's red, highlighted in red. That means that we're looking at this digital camera data set, about 1,000 cameras. Each point represents a camera. We're looking at the scatterplot where we have maximum resolution over price. Now, as I mentioned, if you want to go to another point in this scatterplot matrix, we do it with an animated transition, and we do it in using a 3D rotation. So this is how it works. So what I'm basically doing as the first step is extruding into 3D using the destination dimension I'm going to. Then I rotate, and finally I project back into 2D again, but now having swapped one of the dimensions. And hopefully, because you're doing this in 3D, we add some kind of meaning to the transition. People have been shown in the literature to be able to determine shape from 3D motion, hopefully more than in linear interpolation wise, but we have not evaluated this in an experimental study yet. So back to the presentation. You already saw the ScatterDice application. It's a Java tool that we built using Joggle, which is the OpenGL bindings for Java. It loads multidimensional data sets. This is the digital camera one. We could load other ones, of course. But this digital camera data set has some meaning for most people here. It provides a way to visually explore the scatterplot matrix using a series of interactive animated transitions. We also support reordering of dimensions. You might remember that I said earlier in the talk that a matrix does not have an intrinsic order, so we can find an order that has some kind of meaning. We do that either by allowing the user to manually drag and drop columns or rows to put them where they want. Maybe you find an interest to compare prices as opposed to the maximum resolution of a camera and a third dimension, like the weight of the camera. Or you can do it automatically. And we propose in the paper just a simple metric based on the correlation between dimensions. In a way, we arrange the space to facilitate exploration. So what we do is we compute the correlation between dimensions and put dimensions that are close to each other, that are similar, next to each other on the horizontal axis, and that are the inverse of the correlation, that is, as dissimilar as possible, on the vertical axis. So that means if we do this automatic reordering, the user is able to navigate left or right to see scatterplots that are similar to the ones they're looking at currently, or up and down or down to see ones that are as different as possible from the scatterplots you're viewing. Now, you'll notice that what you saw from the brief demo and what I've been talking about, that interaction is a key element here. It's very important. We have a lot of scatterplots. They're simple in themselves, but we provide ways of navigating through them using interactive techniques. And here are a few of the ones that are also mentioned in the paper. What you just saw was stepping, which means going from one cell in the matrix to the adjacent cell. We also provide scratching, which is like a DJ scratches between two records. Basically, you can see the transition between one cell and another. Path planning, where you go in a sequence through a matrix from a start point to a stop point. You will see all the intervening positions as well. Path drawing, where you draw the path that you want to go through the matrix so that you can get an idea of the data set. And hyperjumps, which try to go from one start point to a destination in one or two steps. Remember that we have to do rectilinear movement. We can't do diagonal movement. So if in this case we're changing both dimensions, it has to be in two steps. First a vertical and then a horizontal transition. So let's go to demo. Staying on track here. So this is a digital camera data set. And you already know the basics here, but let's say an analyst is looking at this. Let's say that one of us is looking at this, trying to figure out which camera to buy. Well, we might see, first of all, that there appears to be some kind of segmentation in price. And I'm going to highlight this, and we do that using query layers, as we call them. So I see that there are four basic segments here, and I'll try to create query layers for each of them. As you can see on the lower left here is a query layer box, which is kind of the layer management box in a tool like Photoshop. It has the same kind of functionality, but it's for queries. You can see, for instance, that there's 900 cameras in the first query. That's about 87% of the data set. We can do flattening of two layers into one. We can do Boolean operators between them as well. At the moment, there's no intersection, so that's not going to be interesting. Anyway, this is the four different price ranges, the first one being less than $1,000, and then we have a lower mid, higher mid, and a high-end price range for cameras. And now the interesting thing is we want to look at, for instance, the release years of these cameras. So I'm going to navigate to the right, stepping. I can look in the scatterplot matrix to see that the next dimension on the right is release date. So if I want, I can keep going back and forth to see how points in one scatterplot map to points in another. If I want, I can even scratch, as I mentioned, to see the transitions. So looking at this image, we can see some interesting things about this data set. First of all, remember that the red hull was the cheapest cameras. Well, you can see that it appears like the cheapest cameras were the ones that came in the beginning. I want to look at one of these. I can grab this eccentric labeling lens, and I can see that this is the Kodak DCS 420, which appears to be the first digital camera that we have in this data set, at least. It's less than $1,000. It came in 94. Then in 96, we had a new camera that was more expensive. That's the yellow hull. It was above $1,000. And later on in 2001, we get the green hull. And finally in 2002, the blue hull of the really expensive cameras. So yes, looking at this, we can note that there appears to have been some kind of segmentation of the market. In the beginning, you had cheap cameras. And then as digital camera technology progressed, you got increasingly advanced cameras that were maybe targeted at professionals as well. And the most expensive camera here, where is my lens? There. It's the Canon EOS 1DS Mark III. So if you have one of those, you should be happy. What else can we do with this? Well, let's say that I'm looking for a camera, and it shouldn't be too expensive, so we'll choose the red layer. And I'm interested in looking at the zoom factors, both telezoom and wide zoom. So I'm going to find the scatter plot that matches this in my data set. And that looks like it could be this one. That's zoom, wide zoom and telezoom. So I click there, and I'm taking to this. This way I'm just doing a path planning, so I'm going through all the steps. And finally I end up in the destination. So let's say that I want to refine my query. I want to refine the red query to only include cameras that are on the upper right, that is a high telezoom and a high wide zoom. So I do this, and that's a refinement. It's an intersection operation. So my query is now smaller. I now have 82 cameras in there. It's what we call this query sculpting, because you can think of it as like a sculptor takes a piece of stone. He chips away the outline, keeps rotating the stone, chips away the outline until he has a fine finished sculpture. So maybe weight has also a meaning for me. So I don't want the camera that's too heavy. So I'm going to select the ones that are not that heavy. I now have 13 cameras. I don't know what else I could look at. Maybe I want to look at the ones that are the cheapest of these ones. Well, they all seem to be in the same bunch. So let's just take the lens and inspect what we have here. Well, it's a number of Fujifilm cameras and a Samsung and a few Panasonics that we could choose from. Anyway, back to the presentation. I'm going to wrap up. So the basic idea that we presented in this paper and during this talk has been the idea of, as opposed to creating complex visualization, combining several multiple simple visualizations to show complex data and provide interactive transitions between the different component plots. In this way, we can visualize complex data sets, and we can also have, in order to do this, a key element is to provide meaningful transitions between the plots, as well as interactive interaction techniques that are meaningful to the users, so they have a mental model of how they're moving through the space. Also, I showed you the query layer management. There's more details in the paper, how we can sculpt queries, refine them, and use this in an iterative fashion to come up with an answer. In the future, we are thinking about evaluating this. As you may note, there's no empirical evaluation of the work so far. We think it's powerful for many visual exploration tasks, and we'll look at that too. And we also want to take a step back and see if there are other ways to apply the same method of taking many simple visualizations, stitch them together into complex visualization, so we can still keep some of our casual users in the loop. Thanks for your attention.
Any questions?
So it depends. You can control it if you're stepping, which is the longer you hold the key in this case. I mean, it's a detail how we developed it, but the longer you hold the key, you can do that. The longer the transition will take. So I can do it slowly. I can do it. I can flip through them fast like that. It's a setting, of course, how fast you want to do it. If you want to see the actual transition, you can scratch, which is what I showed. You basically can stop at any point in time to see the transition. And I can keep scratching over the whole matrix if I want to. Okay, thanks.
Robert? My question is, this is working. I like the idea of using animation here to give the a non-expert user an idea of what's actually going on, what he or she's seeing. But I also noticed that while you were navigating through your matrix there, you had considerable problems finding which plots belong together. So have you thought about providing some additional navigation aids in the matrix so that people can actually find which plots have common axes and some more easily than by figuring out if they're on the same row or column or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. You can probably label each data plot so that you can see, at least when I'm highlighting, when I'm going around, to see what dimensions are actually involved in each plot. So there are many, many improvements to be made to the actual interface. That's correct.
Matt? Somebody need help here.
Oh, sure.
Okay. I found that that when you went through the transitions quickly, very, very disturbing. When you slow it down a little bit more, and I think that has to do with the fact that the moment you pop me in 3D, there's a different cognition activity that's occurring than the 2D color representation of areas. And I think you're going to find that perceptually you're going to have an inhibitor in the individual in the context switching. So I like very much the combination of layers and the interactions, but the transitions are extremely, I think, cognitively demanding and potentially out of context of what a person is trying to do.
Yeah, maybe that's correct. We haven't evaluated it, like I said. We do know that there's literature that shows that you can deduce shape from motion, and you can find the reference in the paper, which is something that we rely on. But like I said, it's a postulation so far.
Okay.
Jean-Daniel, you wanted to respond?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, have you seen your kid playing video games in 3D?
I think it's a very interesting technique. I had an observation as you were refining your query for the particular cameras you were looking for. Your original layout of scatter plots, I believe you mentioned that you did a correlation with exactly a clustering, but you put those that were more highly correlated close to each other. And that's fine for the whole data set. But then when you made a sub-selection and you were looking for a specific set of cameras, you were attempting to refine that selection of the camera you were looking for. And I'm wondering if you've given any thought to sort of dynamic statistics. Like once you make a subset, you might be interested in now which axis has the highest variation or the highest variability, so that you could then very quickly, possibly, refine that subset to a very small number that might be exactly what you're looking for. Have you given any thought to that part?
That's a good point. We haven't looked so much into it, but I imagine that kind of thing could be integrated with the lens, for instance. You could go over the query, the actual points that you want to look at, or the query that you want to look at with your lens, and you can get statistical parameters of the points inside, for instance. So yes, we could integrate it with more data mining type approaches as well. That's a good point. We haven't. So the question was about how do we manage how you perform the refinements for each layer? So a layer is just a snapshot in time. It doesn't show what we actually did to arrive at a specific query. And the answer to that is that that's a good point. We'd like some kind of history. We haven't gone that far. And we were thinking, for instance, that perhaps you could overlay the history of your interaction on top of the scatter plot matrix. So maybe if you highlight one of the query layers, you will see where you have traversed so far, where you did operations, refinement operations, and perhaps in that way get a feeling for what you did. But that's a point of improvement, yes.
Yeah, I find the demo very compelling, but my concern here is that the use of categorical variables is heavily influencing the animation effect that's providing a large-scale landmark structure, if you will, that aids in the animation. Can you comment on how this might work with more continuous variables?
Well, obviously, I found a good data set to present here. And we played with some different data sets, and if you have categorical data, you will see this layering effect. The price is not categorical, obviously, but so for that example, it's a good data set here. But I don't have any more than anecdotal evidence for quantitative data on a large scale.
Any other questions?
We actually do color the points.
Okay.
So maybe it's hard to see in the screen, and we could probably improve that. But all the selected points are red, if you see that. Well, it's hard to see. You have occlusion as well. And all the points that are not selected are blue. But it's a good point. So you can see the data points there. If I select a few, you see that these ones are red. Inside the query. Well, actually, it's not helping that it's a red layer. Let's do that. You will note that the selected points are red, and the ones that are not selected are blue. But like you say, if I go to another, you will have the effect that a few of the blue points are going to fall inside the hull. But we try to make it visible through coloring the points. But there are improvements to be made there, too.
Thank our speaker.